Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines before the Gemara gets wide. You'll notice a diamond toward the lower part of the narrow lines of Gemara. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading. The diamond system of marking was explained in our previous shiur. So on the side we see the she'ela, a question. Ma din chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin shekidesh bas chorin. What is the ruling concerning a person who's a half slave, half free, who marries a full-fledged Jewess, a regular Jewish woman? The Gemara. Ibayalaho. Of course, we are working with the assumption that everyone knows that a slave is not allowed to marry a Jewish woman. What is the status of a half-slave, half-free, who marries a Jewish woman? The style of this question, you notice we have a long question marking. We should point out also that we're assuming that you're familiar with the last couple of dapim, so we're not going to go over some rudimentary points concerning an chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin. We have, as we say, a long question, and the style of the question is going to be as follows. If you think that you can conclude or resolve the question from X, we're going to tell you, no, X is not similar to our case. And if you're going to think to conclude the question to provide an answer from Y, we're going to tell you no, Y is not similar to our case either. So that the attempts that you might suggest as a means of resolving the question are not going to be successful, and hence, at the end of the long question, you'll see the Gemara is left with my. So what is the din? So we continue in the Gemara. If you would try to say, Ben Yisrael Shomar Labas Yisrael, a regular Jewish man that says to a regular Jewish woman in terms of marriage, he says to her, Hizkashi L'chatzoyai, be married to half of me. Well, if he uses an expression like that, we know Mikudeshes. She's considered a married woman. She's married to half the man. What is the reason? Because dechazia lekulei, the woman, the Jewish woman, is fit to marry all of the man. Now you're probably smiling or even laughing. What do you mean be married to half of me? What is the guy's intention by saying that? So we can explain his intention is that he plans to take another wife, which is legitimate in terms of Talmudic law, and hence he says, be half of me, and the other half of me will be for another woman, but that's okay. Why does it work? So as we said, it works because the woman is fit and potential in legal terms to marry all of him. So that, however, cannot serve as a basis of us concluding here that there's the concept of a half marriage takes place. Ha, meaning our case of the chatzi eved who marries a bas Yisrael, lo chazya lekulei, she is not fit to marry all of him. She's a Bas Yisrael, so she's fit to his half that's free, but she's not fit to his half that is enslaved. V'intim seloimar, and if you try to conclude from the following, Ben Yisrael Hamakadesh Chatzi Isha. Jewish man marries half a Jewish woman. The suggestion in that deal would be that the other half of the woman will be married to another man. Well, we know that in a case like that, where a Ben Yisrael is Mekadesh, half a woman, Eino Mekudeshes. She is not considered married. Why? The Shir Bekinyonoi. He's left out what he should have acquired. He should have acquired the entire woman. The other half of the woman is certainly not fit to marry another man. One woman is not allowed to be married to two men, in contrast to one man is allowed to marry two women. So the case of a full-fledged Jew that marries half a Jewish woman, that kind of half marriage does not work because the man left out what he should have concluded, what he should have bonded with. In other words, he should have bonded with the entire woman, not with half of her. So therefore, that doesn't work. However, the ha eved lo shir b'kinyano. In our case of the chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, when he married the Bas Yisrael, the entire part of him that was fit for the Bas Yisrael was marrying her. The slave part of him wasn't fit to begin with, so there wasn't anything in his marriage to the Bas Yisrael that was left out. So as we have tried to demonstrate, the two suggested precedents for resolving our question are simply not parallel to our case. So what's the law? My. Now we have some markings that we want to draw your attention to. You'll see a house marking with a colored in tip. The first house that you see is around the word expression Toshma. This is an attempt to show that Mikudeshes, that the deal where the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Mechorin marries a Bas Yisrael, that there is a marriage. The flipped over house will be to reject that conclusion. In other words, citing the source as an attempt is not an accurate answer. It doesn't do the job. So it's a rejection of that. Now the Gemara. Toshma. We have a source that we've actually seen recently. A goring ox, a shor hamuad, hamis, it killed Misha chetzu eved chetzu ben chorin. It killed an individual that was half slave, half free. When a slave is killed, so there's a knas payment called shloshim shel kesef, which we've discussed also recently. When a ben churin is killed by a goring ox, there's a payment called koifer. So what happens when you have a chatzi eved chatzi ben churin that's killed? So it says noisein chatzi knas l'raboi v'chatzi koifer l'yorshov. Half knas would be 15 pieces of silver are paid to the master, and half koifer. Koifer is an amount, is a value of the person as he's worth in the market. If he were sold as a slave, how much would people pay for him? So half of his market value is paid liorshav to his heirs. The e amris kiddushav lav kiddushin, if you're going to say that his marriage, the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, can't get married to the Bas Yisrael, then yorshin menole, where are there any heirs? And the source describes the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin as having heirs. It must be that he married a Bas Yisrael in a legitimate marriage, and the children are considered heirs, Jews that are heirs. The Gemara says, no, you don't see from the word Yorshin the marriage of the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin to a Bas Yisrael. You don't see that. Omar Rav Ado Bar Ava, Kishe Asoi Trefa. Uma Yorshov Nafshei. This is I would have to say this is an imaginative type answer. He says that the ox didn't actually kill him to the point that the victim would be buried, but the ox imposed upon him a mortal injury. Trefa is a phenomenon where organs or certain limbs are damaged to the extent that the person will not continue living very much longer. So he was made into a trefa. And umay yorshav, what does yorshav mean? It means nafshei. It means you'll pay the man himself that was injured, because he's like dead. Parenthetically, I can give you an example of the, if I'm not mistaken, the halach is if a person commits a murder of someone that was a trefa, the murderer is not subject to the same penalty as someone who murders a healthy, a regular healthy person. So you can see that a trefa is considered in halacha as if he's light, as if he's dead. Oh, so if he's dead, so then he can be paid. He's paid the chatzi kofer. Note that we have a special marking under Rav Ado Bar Ava on the side under our mivne heading. This represents a highlighting of the names Rav Ado and then Rava. And we've written on the side the Cholkim Behesber Hamokur Dehemis Mi, etc. This Tanaic source that we just cited is going to be interpreted alternatively by Rava. But in the meantime, what have we done in the Gemara? We had a question regarding the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Choron marrying a Bas Choron, or what we call Bas Yisrael. We try to answer that there is, in fact, there is a marriage there, and Rav Ado says there is no marriage there. As far as the our main discussion, we finished the discussion. However, you notice there's a bracketed section. The reason for the brackets that we have is to say, first of all, like we just said, that the main discussion is over. And we have a note on the side, a starred note. Let's read it together. Simanu Sograim, we've marked brackets. Laharois Dekan Mistayim Ikur HaMahalach, that at this point the main discussion finished. Im Dechias Rav Ado Bar Ahava. It finished with his rejection of the answer. Betoch HaSograim Muva Daito Shorava. Within the brackets, Rava's opinion will be cited. Shecholek al hezberoi shel Rav Ado, the Moker Hamis, were arguing on Rav Ado's explanation of the Moker of this Tanaic source to a Hamis of Mishachetzi of it, etc. We recommend that you look at the commentary of the Ritva from the Mosada Rav Kook edition. And there's a footnote 109 in the that quotes the Rashba, and you'll see from that information that why we've marked the Gemara the way we have. So now let's continue. Omar Rava, shtei tshuvos badover. Rava says, I have two objections to what you, Rav Ado, just said regarding the source. Now what? So, here you have a case of Gemara structure with the potential to influence the outcome of halacha. If we would approach this Gemara, for example, just as a regular flow without brackets and all of our explanation, one might get the feeling that Rav Ado, that the Rava is rejecting Rav Ado and then reinstating the answer just before, that there is a marriage. A chatzi eved chatzi mechoron, that marries a bas choron, a marriage takes hold. We don't want to come to that conclusion through Rava. However, when you look at the commentaries, you might discover that such a conclusion at the end of this sugya, in fact, is reached. You might, if your eye catches the Tosfos Rid, you notice to the side of the Gemara and the Tosfos Rid commentary, and the opening lines say there, "Misha chetzi eved chetzi ben choron shekidesh bas choron mekudesh is he." She's considered married, mishum tzad chirus shebo, because of the half free that's in the fellow. And he goes on, but just to give you a flavor of how Rishonim might conclude this Gemara. But in the meantime, we're going to continue with our approach that Rava is taking issue with Rav Ado's interpretation of the Tanaic source. And he says, Shtei Tshuvos Badover means that I have two objections to your approach. Chado de Yorshev Katoni. First of all, the word Yorshev means his heirs. It doesn't mean himself. To say that like Rav Ado said that the ox made the man into a trefa, and he himself is going to be paid as if he were his own heir, that's a hard thing to say, says Rava. V'oid, furthermore, koferhu, the payment that we're discussing is the kofer payment. And there's a rule concerning the kofer payment. V'yomar Reish Lakish, kofer ein mishtalim elo le'achar misa. The kofer payment is paid only after the person is dead and not a trefa. Dead meaning fully dead in the conventional, common sense of the word. So there wouldn't be any kofer paid to a person made into a trefa. So what does Rava do with regard to the source? How does he approach the source? Elo omar Rava, roi litoil. The chatzi kofer payment is something that, in theory, ought to be paid. The ain lo. However, we can't pay it. Why not? And here we look at Rashi. The ain lo. Rashi across from here says, Shari Mace, the man is dead. The yorshim ain lo sheyigvu. And I felt that here we should emphasize this. Rashi takes the approach, like we suggested before, that he can't have yorshim. He doesn't have heirs because he can't have heirs because there is no marriage. So in principle, Rava agrees with Rav Ado's halachic conclusion, but for different reasons. In other words, the source is interpreted differently. And the payment of the chatzi kofer is not made in actuality. It ought to be paid because the man was dead, but he has no one to pay to. He has no heirs. V'zeh ha-mazik, Rashi says, zocha b'mashe b'yado, ulolam b'shemes, and we're talking about, you know, Rashi says that the offender is gets off lucky over here. The money he should have paid, he ends up keeping, and that means the offender is the owner of the ox. And we're talking about a case lolam shemay, b'shemes, meaning not like Ravada said, who said trefa, v'ochi komar, and the source teaches us as follows: no sen chatzi knas, the rabu half, the knas payment, that's the payment, the fine that's paid to the owner of a slave that was killed. So half of that goes to the master. V'chatzi kofer roi linosein liyorshav im hoyu lo yorshim, if he would only have yorshim, but he can't have yorshim. Now we have a new discussion. You can see in the Gemara we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side we have a marking the Nosei Klali, a general topic heading, with a Mivne, a structural note. First of all, you notice a bow tie shape. The bow tie, if you allow your eye to skim ahead, and we always encourage that in Gemara markings. After all, Gemara markings is a map of the Gemara, so you want to get a general feeling, a general overview. So you'll notice how these bow ties continue till Amud Beis, till the Mishnah on Amud Beis. By the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So the note says, regarding the bow tie shape, dinim umikrim shonim b'chatzia Shivcha v'chatzia baschurin. Different laws and cases involving a woman that's half bondmaid, it's the equivalent of half slave, and half free. The triangle marking will appear, and that represents deos, opinions, shechetzia shivcha v'chetzia baschurin sheniskatcha ein kidushe kidushin, a half slave, half free woman that was married by a ben chorin, by a regular Jewish man, the marriage doesn't take hold. The inverted triangle indicates deus hafuchos, opposite opinions, shekidush, and that her marriage is a marriage. Now the Gemara. Just one more point. The double underline that you see highlights the expressions kishem and kach, means just like this, so to this. That will become clearer as we go into the Gemara. Omar Rava, kishem shehamekadesh chatzi isha eino mekudeshes, just like a man who marries half a woman that marriage does not take hold. We could say it's a joke. Kach chetzio shivcho v'chatzio baschurin nishenis kacha. If she were to be married by a Jew, ein kiddusha kiddushin, the marriage does not take hold. Dorash Rabo bar Rav Huna. He says the same thing as Rava. Kishem shamekadesh chatzi isha ein emekadesh. Just like one who marries half a woman, the marriage doesn't take hold. Kach chetzio shivcho v'chatzio baschurin shenis kacha. Eino mekudeshes. She is not considered married. Omar le Rafista midomi. How Rafista opposes, and he says, how can you compare? Hosam, in the case of someone who marries half a woman, shir bekinyono, the man left out of his acquisition of the bond half of what he should have acquired. In the case of a man marrying a chatzi shivcho chatzi baschurin lo shir b'kinyano, he married every aspect of her that was available to him. A Jewish man cannot marry a shivcho; he can marry a baschurin, and he married all of that which was available. Hadar oikim rabo bar Rav Huna amura ole v'dorash. Now, you'll notice that the previous triangle, Rabo, Rav Huna, was a 1. You see here a 2? It's the same man. Now he's switching his opinion. As Rav Chisda contested Rabo's ruling, so then, Hador Oikim is to set up things. Rabo set up a man. It's called an Amora. Amora is a person that would publicize the teachings of the Rav, of the rabbi. So, Hoda Oikim Rabo Bar Ravuna Amora Ole. He set up the Amora, I call it the human PA system. And he said, and we have a bracketed line in a word, we'll skip that for a second. Afal Pisha Omru Hamakadesh Chatzi Isha Eina Mekudeshes, even though one who marries half a woman, it's not a marriage. Avo Chatzi Ashivcho Chatzi Baschorin Shenis Kacha Kiddusheo Kiddushin. The marriage is a marriage. And he goes on to explain, just like Rav Chisda pointed out. We skipped a line. Let's go over the line again. The line isn't really an introduction to what Rabo wanted to say. We already read the heart of what he wanted to say. But he's aware, Rabo feels, in light of Rav Chisda's correction, he feels that he originally had made a mistake, and now he was set straight. And when it comes to learning Torah, not that we advocate making mistakes, but when one initially makes a mistake and then is corrected, it has greater clarity. It has, let's say, greater force, certainly for the one who is teaching it. So we looking back into more in the bracketed section, Rabo said, this is a quote from a pasuk, and Rashi, by the way, elaborates on it, gives you quite a bit more background, all based on the Gemara that you see in Masechet Shabbos. The pasuk literally has to do with a machshela, is a stumbling block, is under your control, means even though people stumble on it, you are a master of it. Ein adam oimed al divrei Torah, a person doesn't literally stand in the Torah, meaning a person doesn't have a firm footing in Torah. Elo im kein nifshablan, unless he first made a mistake. And Rabbi, of course, is describing his own situation. He had made a mistake, but now he's saying something with a sense of certainty. Even though it is known that a man who marries half a woman, she is not married. But in contrast, her marriage is a marriage. My taima, why the distinction? In the case of a man marrying half a woman, half a Jewish woman, he left out of the bond half of what he could have bonded with. He should have bonded with the entire woman, and he didn't do so. Ha'cha lo shir b'kinyono here, in the chatzi shivcha bas, chatzi bas choron that a Jewish man married, he didn't leave out anything that he could have bonded with. He bonded with whatever was with that which was available to him. As we said, the half slave aspect of her wasn't available to him, so he did everything he could have done. Omar Rav Sheshes. Again, notice the triangle, point up, and there's a long point. Notice we have that marking as well. Rav Sheshes tells us, Kishem Shemekadish Chatzisho Eino Mekudeshes, just like marrying half a woman doesn't take hold, Kach Chatzishivu Chatzibas Chorin Shineskacha Ein Kedusha Kedushin. Her marriage is likewise not a marriage. Ve'im Lachsha Chodom Loimar, and if someone tries to tell you to the contrary, and then he elaborates on what someone might try to tell you, you will tell him back what we will see later. So that's why we have this all part of a long point that Rav Sheshes is making. So the basic halacha Rav Sheshes said, and then he goes on to equip you to answer those who might challenge you. If someone whispers to you, that's literally, but it's an attempt to challenge what you said, and what will he try to say? Well, Ezohi Shifcha Charufa. Shifcha Charufa is an expression from the Torah regarding a certain situation of a bondmaid and a relationship that she has with someone else. And there are many opinions as to what a Shifcha Charufa is. So as we go on in the Gemara, you'll see actually two opinions right away. So someone might come and tell you, what's a Shifcha Charufa, which is referred to in the Torah? Well, Zu Shechetzio Shifcha V'chatzio Bas Chorin Ha'orosa Li'eved Ivri Almo Bas Yisrusihi. So they might try to tell you, oh, you know, it's a Shifcha Charufa is a half bondmaid, half free woman, that's married to a Jewish slave. Just by the way, for general edification, a Jewish slave is, first of all, he's a regular Jew. However, since he's enslaved, the Torah provides that his master can give him a shifcha, a heathen bondmaid, for procreation purposes. That's just by way of general knowledge. The Gemara here is addressing the parsha in the Torah that we just said is Shifcha Charufa. And what is that? That's a half Shifcha, half Baschoren, that's married to an Eved Ivri. So what do you see from here? You would see that she is marriageable. Well, Emor Lo Klach Eitzel Rabbi Yishmael. You tell him to go to Rabbi Yishmael. It means go to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. This marking, this volcano shape, is needed for the Gemara on Omid Beis. So he says, go to Rabbi Shmuel. Shehu Omer, he has a different pshat in what Shifcha Charufa is. We didn't mention before because we don't want to burden you with too many details, but the parsha of the Shifcha Charufa indicates if she is a partner in an act of immorality with someone else, so a guilt offering, a korban oshem, would have to be brought. There's no death penalty in her case, but there is a korban that's brought. So Rabbi Shmuel says his definition of Shifcha Charufa, that's why you see a little bays now, a second approach. You know what it is? It's B'Shifcha Kenainis HaMurasa Li'Eved Ivri. A full-fledged heathen bondmaid, that's Murasa. Murasa is a word that usually means married to an Eved Ivri. And B'Shifcha Kenainis Bas Yisrusi is a heathen bondmaid capable of entering into a legal marriage? Of course not. Ela my islach lemeimar, my mureses miyuchedes. What are you going to have to say then? When you see the term mureses in the context of the shifcha, understand it. It means reserved. She's reserved for. What then does Rabbi Shmuel say Shifcha Charufa is? It's a full fledged bondmaid that was designated to be together with a particular Jewish servant. It's not a marriage. It's a recognized legal relationship where they can have intimacy with one another and children are produced. And then if some outsider comes and has intimacy with that shifcha that's been miyuchedes, liyachedes, to designate or isolate something. She was designated for this particular Jewish servant. Some outsider comes and has intimacy with her, so he has to experience the penalties that the Torah dictates regarding such a case. There's no capital offense, by the way, that we mentioned before. So just like Rabbi Shmuel, even though he used the term murasa, but it doesn't mean marriage. It means reserved for. Hachanami, so too, in the Pshat Aleph. My murases. What does mureses mean? Miuchedes. It means she's been reserved for an Eved Ivri. But not to suggest for a moment that a Chatzi Shivcha, Chatzi Baschoren, has any connection with the institution of marriage, of regular Kiddushin. Kiddushin, by the way, and the term Erusin or Muras are interchangeable terms when you speak in terms of the laws of matrimony. But in this case, when you're talking about a Shivcha, whether she's a complete Shivcha according to Rabbi Shmuel, or according to the Aleph Pshat, the first Pshat, a half Shivcha, half Baschoren, the word Murasa is simply a borrowed expression, meaning she's Miuchedes, but not really married. I'm going to repeat something again, just to make things clear. When we discuss is there a marriage or not, the primary difference is if a marriage takes hold, then you're dealing with the topic of Eishes Ish, a married woman, and that could have a death penalty associated with one who has immorality, who has intimacy with her other than her husband. If you say there's no marriage, so then obviously you're not dealing with a capital offense. We continue in the Gemara. Again, our bow tie indicates further discussion on the topic of Chatzi Shifcha, Chatzi Baschoren, but this is a new trend of thought. And note that we have a long marking. Rav Chisda. Omar Rav Chisda. Chetzi Shifcha v'chetzi Baschoren. Shenizkat shal l'Reuven. She entered a bond of matrimony with a fellow by the name of Reuven. It's like John Doe. John Smith. It's just a general name. Vinishtachror, and she was set free. In other words, her half slave was then redeemed, and she was now a total free woman. Vichozer vinishtachel l'Shimon, and then she married Shimon. Now, in this case, Shimon is a reference to the brother of Reuven. In the subsequent Gemara, we're going to see the names Reuven and Shimon, and there Shimon is just an additional general name, not indicating a brother. But in this particular Gemara, she, after receiving total freedom, she went ahead and agreed to marry his brother while Reuven was still alive. Umesu Shneim, and these two men, Reuven and Shimon, died, leaving no children. They left, however, a surviving brother, a third brother. His name is Levi. This woman, Misyabemes Lelevi, she does the Yibum marriage with Levi. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. V'ein ani korei bo eishes shnei mesim. And I don't view this as an alternative or a different situation that's featured in Maseches Yevomis, in the Tractate of Yevomis, where a woman who has a connection to, let's say, to two brothers, and they die, she does not marry the third brother. I don't want to burden you with details right now. Rashi gives the background for it. Suffice it to say, for our purposes, that this situation is not like the non-Yibum situation known as Eishes Shnei Mesim. What's the difference? Because in this case with Reuven and Shimon and the bondmaid that was half free and then subsequently totally free, Monafshach, you look at this as an either-or situation. She is not viewed as being connected to the two brothers. It's an either-or situation. When a woman, we're just going back to the case in Yevomis, when a woman is said to have had a connection to two, a legal connection, of course, to two brothers, and then they die, and she does not do Yibum with the third brother. But in this case, we don't say thusly. Why not? E Kiddushei Ruvain Kiddushin, if the marriage to Ruvain was a recognized marriage, Kiddushei de Shimon Lav Kiddushin, then Shimon, Ruvain's brother, had no marriage with her whatsoever. Zero marriage. Remember, these two brothers, after Ruvain married her, Shimon can't do anything with her. She'd be married completely to Ruvain. The Kiddushei Shimon Kiddushin, and if the marriage to Shimon is a marriage, then Kiddushei Ruvain Lav Kiddushin. That's an indication that the marriage to Ruvain was a non-marriage. It was a total non-marriage, because if it was a marriage, then Shimon's marriage wouldn't have been able to take hold. So if you say that Shimon's marriage takes hold, then the marriage to Ruvain was a non-marriage. So when they die, she was married to either Ruvain or Shimon, not to both. The Rashi that began at the top, we're going to pick it up in the middle. We're going to look at Rashi on the fourth narrow line. Aval hocha lo zikas shnayim oleha. She doesn't have a connection with the two of them. The chad minayo kiddushin gemurin, one of them, either Ruvain or Shimon, is a complete marriage. Udi idoch lav klum, and the other one is nothing. Umihu mishum plukto damaroi deliel. However, in light of the Machlokes Amoroim that we saw earlier, we had the triangles in the previous discussion. You had Rava and Rav Sheshes going in one direction, and then Rabba Bar Avuna switching directions. So there was a Machlokes Amoroim, and what's very interesting to note is that Rav Chisto in the previous discussion was the one that raised an objection. Here, it's also Rav Chisto speaking. It seems that he remains in a state of doubt, so that even though he was responsible for raising an objection, it doesn't mean that he necessarily positively disagreed with the others. He raised an objection, as is the case many places, in many places in the Shas, where you are not sure and you don't approve of one side taking a positive stance, so you raise an objection. That doesn't mean that you disagree. It means simply don't take a positive stance. There's another way of looking at things, and that's what you see here. As the Gemara says, because of the machlik samurim from before, misafkalon, we're in doubt. Hey, minayavi kiddushin, which one really was the kiddushin? Vahashtu the mesu lehu. Now that the two have died, misyabemis the Levi mimonav shach. She enters a yibum marriage with Levi. As we said, either her marriage to Ruvain was a marriage, or her marriage to Shimon was a marriage, but not to both. That having been said, we go back to the Gemara. Itmar, another case. Chatzia shifra v'chatzia baschor and shniskatsha l'Reuven. So you have the half bondmaid, half free woman, married a man called Reuven, general name. V'nishtachro, she was then set free. The half that was a bondmaid was released to freedom. The Chozra v'niskatsha l'Shimon. And then she married a man named Shimon. And we're not using Shimon here as a brother of Ruvain. Rav Yosef bar Chama Omar Rav Nachman. Pokru kiddushei rishon. The marriage to the first one. And this idea of marriage to the first one is working with, let's say, a premise that you would accept the opinion that we saw on Omid Aleph. Remember the inverted triangle that indicated that a Chatzi Shifcho Chatzi Baschorin could be married to a Ben Chorin. Even according to that opinion, when the freedom is granted to her other half, so whatever marital bond she had, it expires, it dissolves. she is like a new entity, like a newborn. That's how Rashi explains this. So Rav Yosef Bechama says that though she was married to Reuven, at the point that she was set free and she married Shimon, Rav Yosef's approach, the first approach is Poku Kiddushe Rishon. The first marriage is dissolved. And it would seem to indicate then that she would be considered married to Shimon. The marriage that she has with Shimon is a full-fledged marriage. Rabbi Zeirom Rav Nachman, this is a different opinion as far as what Rav Nachman says. First we had Rav Yosef Bar Chama's version of Rav Nachman, and now Rabbi Zeirom's version of Rav Nachman. Gomru Kiddushei Rishon. With the freeing of the half Shivcha, her marriage to the first person is now completed. You'll ask, what do you mean it was completed? What was it till now? So Rashi explains that when she was Chatzi Shivcha, Chatzi Baschoren, if some outsider had relations with her, had intimacy with her, there would be no capital punishment. There would be a sacrifice, a Korban Oshem that's brought, and if it was intentional, there would be lashings that would be applied for the forbidden act of intimacy. But now, after the second half of her is freed, she becomes fully married to the to her husband, to her, in this case, to Reuven. And if anyone has intimacy with her now, there would be a capital offense. Omar Rebbe Zera, Kavose Didi Mistabra. My approach is most likely. In other words, my version of Rav Nachman is most likely. Dichtiv, the pasuk says regarding the parsha that we referred to before of Shivcha Harufa, the pasuk says Lo Yumsu Kilo Chufasha. There is no death penalty for someone who has intimacy with her because she hasn't been freed. Ha Chufasha. If she would be freed, Yumsu, then there would be a death penalty. So that seems to be describing the same woman with the same man, that initially there was no death penalty because she was a Chatzi Shivcha Chatzi Baschoren, and when she was freed, upon her being freed, now that will generate a death penalty. That's how Rabbi Zeira explained it. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Lo Yumsu Ki Lo. Rashi that we're looking at just a few lines down from here, Umukminan law, and we set up the pasuk as Bechatzi Shivcha Chatzi Baschoren, Usvi'ui Tehachi Kamar. The pasuk is saying, telling us, Einan Chayovan Misa Mishum Eishas Ish. There is no death penalty for some outsider that has intimacy with her. Ki lo chufasha liachar kiddushin. She wasn't set free after her kiddushin. Ha chufasha lebasar achi. If after her kiddushin, she would then be set free. Kiddushin, after her marriage, she'd be set free. Yumsu, then there would be a death penalty. Da'avi lo, eishas ish gemur, that she's now a complete eishas ish. Her marriage to that same man is now completed. That was the Rabbi Zeira, the number two approach. So he feels that you have a basis for that in the pasuk. Omar le Abaye. Abaye addresses Rabbi Zeira, and he cites the shita of Rabbi Shmuel that we had at the bottom of Omid Aleph. We had we mentioned the volcano shape, and we're using it now to make the connection. Ulitana debe Rabbi Shmuel di Omar, according to the opinion from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel that said that a shifcha charufa from this Parsha, Vayikro Perek Yutes, we just got finished citing the Pasuk Chof. He says, B'shivcha Kenainis Hamresis Levit Ivri, a regular, full-fledged bondmaid that was reserved for a particular Jewish servant. Hachi Nami Dechi Chufasha Yumsu. Are you going to explain the pasuk the same way, meaning that when she's freed now, there will be a death penalty, whereas before there was a marriage, but there wasn't a death penalty. That you couldn't say that within the Rabbi Shmuel approach. Why not? Because the initial kiddushin, the initial marriage with a full-fledged bondmaid, is nothing. It's a zero. So you can't use your explanation to the pasuk with Rabbi Shmuel's approach to the subject of the pasuk. Elomayis loch lememar. What are you going to have to say? Abaye says to Rabbi Zera, what are you going to have to say to explain the pasuk according to Rabbi Yishmael? Shechufasha, the full-fledged bondmaid, was set free. V'chazra v'niskatsha, and then a new marriage took place. Oh, and now as a result of a new marriage, offering her money and her accepting it after she's been set free, so that establishes a full-fledged marriage, and therefore we can speak about a death penalty. Well, Hachanami, so too, you, Rebbe Zera, are going to say the same thing with regard to the scenario of the Chatzi Shivcha that was set free, Shechufasha, her half was set free, V'chazor v'nizkatsha, and then she was married. Meaning that whatever took place before her setting free, that doesn't indicate that there was any marriage whatsoever. And to say that upon her half being set free, that completes the initial marriage, not that you don't have any indication of that. But rather, chazor v'nizkatsha. The Rashi says Elo Mayis Lochamemar Duki Dekra Hachi Mashma. The reading of the pasuk is going to be like I'm saying Chazor V'Nizkatsha. We go back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna Bar Ketina. Omar Rav Yitzchak. Maisa Bisha Achas Shechetz Yeshiva V'Chatzi Baschurin. Was an incident with a woman half slave, half free. The kofu es rabo v'asaw bas chorin, and they forced. Rabo means her master. Then they forced her master to set her free. This master had a slave holding in half of her because her other half was already free. Gemara asks a question. Why did they force the master to set her free completely? Why? Come on. Kereb Yochanan Broka, is this in accordance with a minority opinion? Diomar, Rabbi Yochanan Broka says, Al Shneim Loimer, regarding male and female, the Torah says, Vayavorech Oysem Elikim, Vayomer, Vechulik Pru, Revu Milu, Vechulei. This pasuk is a reference to procreation, to be fruitful. The Almighty, in the story of creation, when man and woman were created, so there was a commandment that they shall be fruitful and multiply. The majority opinion holds that obligation is upon males. Females are not, they're obviously a necessary part in fulfilling the mitzvah, it's not their commandment. It's a commandment upon the male population of the world to procreate. Rabbi Yochanan Broka holds that females are equally commanded. And this incident where the Chatzi Shifcha Chatzi Baschorin, who it would appear is someone that has no one whom she can marry. Certainly this would fit in very well with the approach taken by Rabo Bar Rav Huna in the inverted triangle on Omid Aleph, that she has no one she can marry. By setting her free, she now is a full-fledged Jewess. She can marry a Jewish fellow. And why is it so important? Well, it sounds like we're accepting the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Broka. Should we conclude thusly? Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, lo, that's not what to conclude. We're not ruling like Rabbi Yochanan Broka. So why was it so urgent to set her free? Minig hefker nuaguba. In her current status, she wasn't reserved. She wasn't reserved for any man. And she wasn't watching herself, so she was being let's say victim of immorality in that community. And as a result of that, it was advisable. It was pressing to have her set free. She would then be able to get married, and her husband would watch over her, and she wouldn't be a participant in the community znus, community harlotry. The Mishnah. The topic heading that we have on the side introduces the actual words of the Mishnah itself. Hamoicher avdo la'akum yetzel l'cherus, one who sells his slave to an idol worshipper. Where Mishnah also speaks about selling him to chutzar, selling him out to a community outside of Israel, the land of Israel, the slave goes free. The Mishnah. Hamoicher avdo lo'ev v'kechavim o l'chutzar la'aretz yetze ben chorin. Let's read the Rashi. Yetze l'cherus, Rashi on the Mishnah, im borach min ha'oivei kechavim. If he ran away from the idol worshipper to whom he had been sold. Obviously, if he sold to the idol worshipper, the Gentile will enslave him. So when the Mishnah says he goes free, what do you mean he goes free? So Rashi's adding, if he escapes from that Gentile owner, well, then he doesn't go back to his original owner. He goes free. Oy, Rashi goes on, shekonsu beisin livdoisoi. Can we come on? The kinsus livdoisoi. Another approach is that it's true you sold him to the idol worshipper, but we want him to go free. How's he going to go free if he was bought by the oyvet kechavim? You, the original owner, will pay for his redemption. And you'll end up paying possibly a lot more than the price that you got for him in the first place. And when you redeem him, you're not going to re-enslave him. By selling him to a Gentile, he's going to end up being forced to violate mitzvos that he was obligated to observe. For example, a heathen slave owned by a Jew is commanded to keep all the mitzvahs that a Jewish woman is commanded to keep, including the laws of Shabbos, just as an example. If an oyved kechavim, an idol worshipper, Gentile, buys him, he's going to force him to violate Shabbos. Why did you, the Jew, sell your eved to him? That's a bad thing to have done. It's a wrong thing to have done, and therefore, you must lose out. And as we just said, we'll force you to redeem, to buy him back, so to speak, to release him from the Gentile purchaser, even if it's going to cost you a pretty penny. Likewise, one who sells his slave from Eretz Israel to outside Eretz Israel. A person had a slave in Israel. There are many mitzvahs that one is obligated to practice in the land of Israel that are not binding outside of Israel. So here you're taking a person that has an opportunity to fulfill many mitzvahs and selling him to a place where all those mitzvahs are not available to him anymore. That too is a wrong thing to do. The Gemara. One who sells his slave to Gentiles, the slave goes free, as we explained already. What it means, how does he go free? He either runs away, or the original owner has to buy him away from him. And he needs a get shichur, a freedom document from the original Jewish owner. The freedom document will enable him, the slave, to marry a Jewish woman. The requirement of writing a get shichur is when the original master did not write an ono. But by writing an ono, that is his freedom. My ono, what is that? Omar Rav Sheshes, the Kosavle, the original owner in the in his sale, in his, he or in the initial transaction with the Gentile, he writes the kosav lehochi. He writes the following: l'shetivrach mimenu ein li esek boch. He writes this. It seems from the text, he writes it and gives it to the slave himself. When the Jew sold the slave, he gives the slave this document saying, "When you run away from him, I have nothing to do with you." Well, if that was written to the slave, so Rav Shulmalo says there's no need for any further get shichur, for any further freedom document to be written. As we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Mahu Loshon Nimuso. The Gemara will feature a Tanaic source in which this word appears, and we're going to try to define the word. The truth is that this topic heading is a little too brief, but we'll go to the Gemara and see what the topic at hand is. Tanu Rabbanan, Lovo Olov Min Ha'ove Kechavim. A Jew who owned a slave needed to borrow money. So he approached a Gentile. Of course, the Gentile was the subject of our discussion from this most recent Mishnah. The Jew borrowed money, and he set up his slave as a possible source of collection, we'll say. A person who borrows money obviously has to pay back the debt. How is he going to pay back the debt? So the opening line of this source says that the Jew borrowed from the Gentile based on the slave that the Jew owned. Kevon she'osa loy oved kechavim nimusoy yetze l'cherus. Once the Gentile makes his nimuso, and here we can't translate the word yet because that's the Gemara's task, the slave will go free. The nimuso, Rashi points out in Yetzel Lecherus David Kimechira, it's viewed as if a sale took place, Vekonsu Rabbonin. The Rabbonin imposed a fine on the Jewish owner. He is going to lose his slave. Now the Gemara, my nimuso. What does that mean? The triangles that you see in the next few lines are explained on the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading, ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take structure. With the point facing up, tshuva. It's an answer. The inverted triangle, a question. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, nashki. I'm sure you're wondering, well, what's a nashki? So here Rashi explains on the third to last narrow line of the Rashi, choysem. It's a seal, a sign. The simen avdus shetayla avodim etzavrayim. It's hung around, suspended around the necks of slaves, showing, indicating that he is a servant, that he is an eved. So at this point then, nimuso, according to Rav Huna, is a sign that this is a slave. So in the source it says that if the lender, who is a Gentile, suspended a sign of servitude around the slave's neck, it seems to show that it's his slave. So it's as if the borrower sold the slave to the Gentile, and that's why Yetze Lecherus. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes raises an objection. You see, it's a long question, and we're going to have a source now. In the source, the word nimuso will appear, and it's going to appear in the context of real estate, of fields. The source says, Ho'arisen v'achakiros v'arisei botei avois v'oivei kechavim shemishkein sode liYisrael. These are different kinds of, we'll say, work arrangements. Sharecroppers and chakirus is an arrangement where someone works the field and provides the owner with a fixed amount of produce every year. And arisei bate avos are sharecroppers that work for say, work, let's say, generation after generation, where their fathers were sharecroppers, they are sharecroppers. Rashi says, "Varise bate avos kloma risus kvua v'yomedes me avos," a fixed sharecropping, sharecropper arrangement. Shavoisov she Yisrael a recent bekakazel avoisov shel avikom zeh. The forebears of this Jew were sharecroppers in this Gentile's field. Afilu hochi lo havi kekonui liYisrael, even though that was the arrangement, it's not as if the field belongs to the Jew. Elo shalavi kechavim who poter min hamaiser Yisrael who poter min hamaiser Yisrael zeh bechelkoi. Even the Jew's portion that he gets from working the Gentile's field will be exempt from tithes. So we go back into the source. We mentioned the Arisin and the Chakirus and Arisi Beotos, the Oivet Kechovim Shemishkein Sodeu Israel, and a Gentile owned a field and he set it up as collateral for a loan that he took from a Jew. Afalpisha Osa Lo Nimuso Ptura Min Hamaiser. Even though a Nimuso was made, nevertheless, the produce from these from the fields and these work arrangements will be exempt from tithing, because in all of these work arrangements, they were working for Gentiles. They're working in fields owned by Gentiles, and there's a rule that this source is working with that. It's something that's the subject of disagreement, of controversy, but there is an opinion that says that a Gentile that owns land in Eretz Israel, his ownership voids the land from being obligated in tithing. Now, we have the word nimuso, and it says even though he made a nimuso, it's exempt from Meiser. If you're going to interpret Nimuso as the sign suspended around the necks of slaves, Sode Bas Nashkihi is a field connected or related to a Nashki. What in the world would a Nashki have with regard, what does that have to do with a field? Elo Omar of Sheshes Zman. Rav Sheshes explains that what Nimuso means is where the borrower says to the lender, if I don't pay you by such and such a time, then it will be yours. So in the case of the slave that was set up as a source of collection by the Jew to the Oivei Kichovim that loaned him money, if the Jew said, if I don't pay you by such and such a time, this slave will be yours. So we saw in the source, Yetzel Lecherus. And we saw in this last source with the field, where a Gentile owned a field, but he set it up as collateral to the Jew who loaned him money. So the goy, the Oivei Kechavim, said, if I don't pay you by such and such a time, the field will be yours. The Gemara asks, well, Kashya Zman Azman. We have a difficulty here. The Gemara is extremely terse, but it's the difficulty is as follows. In the case of the slave, the Jewish slave, we said that as a result of the Nimuso, which we explained already, having to do with a deadline, the Nimuso was tantamount to a sale to the goy. But yet, in the case of the field, the Gentile field concerning which a Nimuso was made, it's not considered a sale. It's not considered as if it's sold to the Jew, because if it was, it would have been obligated in tithes. So there would seem to be a contradiction in the how we view Nimuso. We'll say that again. In the case of the slave, the Nimuso made it such as if there was a sale, and in the case of the field, it didn't make it such as if there was a sale. The Gemara answers, Lo kashya, there is no difficulty here. Ha de mota zimne, ha de lo mota zimne. Nimuso means, as Rav Sheshes said, it's a setting up a deadline. The two sources that we've just been dealing with all depend on whether the deadline has arrived or not. In the case of the slave, the Jewish-owned slave set up as a source of collection, the deadline arrived and the debt was not paid, so the goy collects the slave. In the case of the field, the deadline to pay up that debt had not arrived yet, so it's still considered the goy's field. Question. Elogabi eved demote zimne tzricha lameimar. In the case of the Jewish-owned slave being considered a sale to the goy because the deadline had arrived and the Jew had not paid up his debt, does that need to be taught? That is obvious. Elo, idi v'idi delo mota zimne. In the case of the slave and the case of the field, really, the deadline had not arrived. V'lo kashya, ha legufa v'ha lepira. In order to appreciate this, we look at the Rashi. Three lines from the bottom. Ha legufa, gabi eved, dekova boizman legufo. In the case of the slave, a deadline was set. It had not been reached yet, but the deadline, when the deadline would arrive, the Gentile who loaned the money will take full possession of the slave. Shim lo yitain lo ad oisus man ye gufo cholut lo vikachovim. The slave goes over lock, stock, and barrel, his entire body, he goes over to the vikachovim. Umeachshav hoy mishtabe bo. V'kevon the zilzel betakanta derabonan, the osu limkor ever lo vikachovim, konsuhu the afagav the lo moto zimne. Since when the time would arrive, the slave would then be enslaved to a Gentile, and the Rabbanon had established, the rabbis established that it's forbidden to sell slaves to Goyim. So they imposed this knas, this fine, on the Jew that even if the deadline had not arrived, that slave is going to go free, and you're going to have to find some other source of payment for the loan. Rashi continues, V'gabi sodeh, dekova loizman leperos, achshav loisoicha leperos. In the case of the field, there was a deadline that was set that if the loan would not be paid up, so the Jew who loaned the money would be entitled to benefit from the fruits. Right now, before the deadline, he is not to consume the fruits. V'imlo Ephra loch liyoin ploni echol peros ad she'efra moisecha. Hilkoch afilu mota zimne lav mechirohi v'kol shekein b'dolo mota zimne. So that right now, before the deadline arrived, the Jew is not going to consume the fruits. When the deadline arrives, the arrangement was that the Jew will start eating the fruits until the cash loan is paid back, till the loan is paid back in cash. Therefore, you can see that even when the deadline arrives, it's not like a sale. And certainly, before the deadline arrived, the Jewish lender isn't going to be consuming the fruits altogether. Therefore, the fruits, when he does eat them, will be exempt from tithes. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Dalet. V'iboyaseimo. Rashi at the top says, Hochi gasim v'iboyaseimo b'shelov almanas l'mashkeno v'lo mishkenoi. The Gemara itself, we should just read that line of Gemara. It's very terse. The Gemara says, "Viboy seimo B'shalova amanas l'mashkeno v'lo mishkeno. The loan that the Jew extended to the Goy was with the intention of taking it as collateral, but he didn't. Now, we look at the Rashi, because we're dealing, of course, in this sugya with the loan that concerned a field, and we saw the loan that concerned a slave. So Rashi spells out the details. Rashi continues at the top line, Ha de Soda. We've highlighted in the Rashi the words Soda and Eved with diamonds, the two cases that we have to resolve. The case of the field, Kagon Shalova Ho'ifet Kechovim Yisrael, Almanas Shimloi Ephra Lizman Ploni, Bo Umashkineni Mikarkazu, the Teshel Ha. The Gentile borrowed money from the Jew with the following understanding, that if I don't pay you by a certain date, come and take this field as collateral. And it shall be yours. The source said it's exempt from tithes. As long as the Jew hasn't come to take it as collateral, as payment, it's exempt. The afagav de mota zimne, that even if the deadline arrived, tavio becheskas evi kechavim, it's still in the possession of the goy. V'im hoyo Yisrael noitel chelik beperos p'tur min ha-meiser. And if the Jew happened to help himself to some of the fruits at that point when the deadline arrived, but he hadn't taken formal possession of the field, those fruits are exempt from tithing. V'gabi eved ki hai gavno. And with regard to a slave under similar or parallel circumstances, konsua rabbonon liyisrael, where the viafopi shelo mishkan oivik yichovim adayin beeved ze konsu hoil viovar zman velo pora. If in the case of the Gentile who extended a loan to the Jew with the understanding that a deadline would arrive and the loan not paid up in cash, the goy would take possession of the slave. Well, even if the goy had not yet taken possession of the slave, the chachomim impose a knas that the slave shall go free since the deadline arrived and he hadn't paid up cash. We turn back to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Govoi, a Gentile, collected a slave. Bechovo, govo bechovoi. Oi, shelokhoi sikrikoin. Lo yetze lecherus. If a Gentile collected a slave as a payment for a loan, or lokhoi sikrikoin, Rashi says, on the word bechovo, shohoyo lo al Yisrael, the Gentile had a loan to collect from a Jew that borrowed money, v'hu lo mochro lo v'lo lovo olov. He didn't sell him, nor was he the basis for the loan. Sikrikon, Rashi says, b'shosh Yisrael mufkoren la'riga. This is at a time that unfortunately was fairly common in Jewish history, where Jews were free for the killing. V'yomar levit kechovim, and the Jew who felt threatened said to the Gentile, "Saw karkazu o eved zev anicheni, just take this piece of land or take my slave and leave me be." So that would be a case of a slave that was taken by the sikrikon. Those are the threateners. Rashi, the Gemara says he does not go free. This is a case of ones. This is a case where the owner is confronted with circumstances beyond his control. So therefore we don't impose a knas on the owner that he should lose the slave or that the slave should go free. The Gemara asks, ubechoivoi loi, where the slave was collected as a means of paying off a debt, are you saying that he doesn't go free? V'romini, we we have the following source that would indicate to the contrary. Haresha Ansoi Beis HaMelech Gorno. If the king's palace came to a Jewish owner of grains, and they took the grains, by force, im b'chovo chayav la'aser. If the grains were taken as a means of collecting a debt that he owed, so the grains that were taken have to be tithed. In other words, even though those you're responsible to make sure that the grains that were taken by the king would be tithed. It's viewed as if you sold the grains to the king, so you have to tithe your stuff. Im anporos potim laser. The word anporos, Rashi explains, hefsid. It was forcibly taken, not as payment of debt, but just they allocated to themselves your produce, causing you a loss. So that kind of situation, you don't have to see to it that the grains that were taken are tithed. And by the way, what do you mean tithe things that were taken? It means that you have other grains still in your possession, so you'll take enough off of them to exempt, to cover that which was taken from you. What do we see, though, from this discussion? We see that the collection of an item because of a debt you owe, in the second source, it's as if you sold it. In the first source, where a slave was collected as payment for a debt, it's not viewed as if you are selling the slave. The Gemara says, basically, when an item is collected from you by force, it's not considered a sale. However, so why in the case of the grains do you have to make sure they're tithed? Shiny hosam, in the case of the grains, it's different. The kamishtar shilei, you are saving yourself from needing to pay the debt from something else. So even though they took the grains from you by force, but it was in payment of a debt that you owe them. So you're benefiting from that. Your debt is being paid off that way. And therefore, since you're benefiting from it, you have to make sure that those grains are tithed. However, in the case of the slave, the rabbis imposed a knas for someone who proactively sells his slave. In the case where the guy collected the slave for a debt you owed him, you didn't offer the slave to the guy. It wasn't something you did willingly. And therefore, there's no grounds for imposing the knas on the owner. We continue in the Gemara. Ta shma. The Omar Rav Hamoicher Avdo Lefarheng Ovikichovim Yetze Lecherus. The Jew sold his slave to a farheng. Rashi, farheng says matzik. He's an oppressor. The Som Alilois. He will cast false rumors. Umochlo b'dme an peruso shelolov. It's a type of extortion. In order to stop the farhang, this oppressor, from casting aspersions and evil rumors about you, so you sold him the slave. As blackmail money, as a blackmail payment. So the teaching of Rav is Yetzi L'Cherus, he goes free. Well, isn't this a case of onus? Isn't this something that is happening beyond your control? Why then do we say Yetzi L'Cherus, which is an imposition of the fine? the Gemara answers, Hosam have le lefayis velo pies. There, the victim should have paid off. Pious is to appease. Should have appeased the oppressor, the extortioner, with something else. And you didn't do that. He paid him off specifically with the slave. So that's considered an act of willingness. It's not a case of oness. Gufa, Omar Rav, Hamoicher, Avdol Lefaring Ovikachovim, Yetzil Lecherus. Rav's teaching, as we just said, he sold his slave as a payment for extortion. He goes free. One asks, why should he go free? What should he have done? What should the owner have done? Answer, he should have offered something else, and he didn't do that. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mochroi L'Shloishim Yoim Mahu. Let us say an owner sells a slave to a Gentile, but for 30 days. And after the 30 days, he comes back. What is the din then? What about, does he go free? Toshma, Diyomar Rav, Hamoicher Avdu Lefareng, Oyvi Kechovim, Yetzil Lecherus. Now here, the thinking is, the Lefareng, Oyvi Kechovim, Rashi says, Kosaka Deva, Lavid Avidos HaMelech, Adzman Ploni Veloshev. It seems that the same word that is used, but with an entirely different meaning. Here, the Lefareng, Oyvi Kechovim is a royal workforce. And the Havamina is that one sold his slave to this workforce that had a time limit on it. In other words, you work for a certain amount of time, and then you go back. And yet, it says, Yetzil Cherus, he goes free. So we see that the Knas is imposed even when it's a Mechir L'Shloishim Yom. The Gemara rejects that. Hosam Befarhang Ovikovim She'eno Choseris. There it's a case of a workforce that is permanent. They're not expected to come back. The Gemara continues with a series of questions. You can see we have numbers. We've numbered up to six. And they all involve a case of a sale of a slave to a, well, we'll see what the cases are. Mochro, chutz mimalachto mahu. He sold to a Gentile, but not for work purposes. In other words, the body of the slave is transferred to the goy, but with the contractual understanding that he's not going to work. What, you'll ask, why in the world would a slave be sold for that purpose? Because the purchaser happens to have a bond made, and they will unite, they will procreate and produce servants, produce children. Now, in a sale like that, so there's not going to be any mitzvah violation. He won't be violating Shabbos. Another possibility is he was sold for work purposes as well, but with the understanding that he will not work on Shabbos or holidays. What is the din? Of course, you understand that the whole fine was imposed because a sale to a Gentile represents the stopping of the servant from fulfilling mitzvahs. But in this case, that doesn't seem to be a problem. Likewise, a sale is made chutz min hamitzvahs mahu, where the goy buys him without any impingement upon the slave's mitzvah performance. Chutz mishabosos v'yam tovim mahu, where a sale is a sale, but excluding shabosos and holidays. During Shabbos and holiday, the ownership reverts back to the Jew. Leger toshav, or he sold to a ger toshav. A ger toshav is a Gentile, but he is not an idol worshiper. Personally, he eats all kinds of foods. He doesn't have any of the Jewish dietary laws. What is the din if you sell a slave to a ger toshav? Or, l'Yisrael mumar, you sell him to a sinning Jew. Mahu. And you can well imagine that in the household of a sinning Jew, he's not going to be observing the mitzvahs properly. L'kusi mahu, let's say he's sold to a kusi. Kusi is a group of people whose conversion to Judaism was subject of great discussion, great debate, and there is an entire school of thought that holds the Kusim have been Geri Arayas. They converted to Judaism out of fear of being attacked by lions, so that their conversion isn't a conversion, a genuine conversion. So let's say you sold the slave to the Kusis. Six questions have been raised. The Gemara says, Pshot Miyochana. One we will resolve. And it appears that the fourth of the questions, the Ger Toshev, will be revealed in this source in an explicit fashion. The source will touch on cases 5 and 6 as well, but not in a definitive way. So the Gemara says, well, we'll conclude one of them. One of them is case 4. Ger Toshev Harehu Ka'ivik Kechavim. The sale to a Ger Toshev, the individual who dwells in Israel, who accepts upon himself the seven laws of Noach. He accepts upon himself not to serve idols, but he does not convert to Judaism. He's a Ger Toshev. That's the term used for that kind of person. In this context, he's viewed as an idol worshiper. And when we say in this context, it means that selling a slave to a Ger Toshev is going to result in the fine imposed on the owner, where the slave goes free. Kusi v'Yisrael Mumar. Kusi was the sixth question, and Yisrael Mumar was the fifth question. Amri lo kivikachovim v'amri lo kisrael. Some say they are viewed as Gentiles, and some say viewed as a sale to a Jew. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.